This is episode 230 on Harnessing the Power of Humility and Faith with James Quigley. You're tuned into Forever Athlete Radio, where together we go far. I'm your host, Corey Camp, and today I sit down with a good friend of mine, James. He's the head of community over at Highbrow Lowbrow, members only club here in Austin, and has just been someone that has made Austin feel like home since before I even got here. James has come from a background in athletics and sports that has taken him all over the world. He's been immersed in cultures from all over and has that experience that he then brings now into building community here and beyond Austin. Something that I felt when I first met him way back in 2020. I took a trip out here to Austin, knew a few people through the Instagrams, the social medias of the world, and James welcomed me to Cosmic Coffee. Before I knew it, we had coffee, tacos, and guns. And I was like, this is the guy that I want to be around. You'll see that in today's episode, truthfully, because we're going to dive into talking about faith, humility in our daily walk and why that is so important, how to build actual true community, and so much more. Before we dive into it, this episode is going to be brought to you by the Forever Athlete platform. It's an all-in-one community hub for everyone that you need in your life and everything you need in your journey after sports. With Forever Athletes all over the world coming together, it's a great place to come together, meet like-minded people and friends, and build that true life teammate bond. At Forever Athlete, we are on a mission to help athletes be happier and healthier in that next season. So come join the platform over at forever-athlete.com. And with that, let's dive into the show. Thanks for coming over, man. How are you feeling?
Good, man. Thank you so much. This is beautiful, by the way. I know we talked about it earlier, but like, I love sunshine, open vibes in a space, and it's just like, this feels nice. It's plants, it's a vibe.
I appreciate it, man. It's taken everything in me to like not be total plant dad and get even more plants and fill the space that way, but I kind of am recognizing it's okay to have tasteful pieces here and there.
I had to go the other way. I had to get fake plants. And really? I know like so many people will cringe on that, but I'm always out of my apartment. That's never fair. Like I'm never home. So, but when I come home, I like greenery.
Yeah.
I like to feel it. So it just went through killing some of my poor plants where I'm like, I'm just going to get some fake plants. And it still feels nice. You don't get, you know, all the benefits of the oxygen and feeling the support of loving something. But that's why I have a dog.
I was about to say.
Yeah, that's why I have a great dog.
I think the challenge living here in Austin at times is being like, oh my gosh, I have to do all of the things all at once to feel like a complete human.
Yeah.
And good on you for recognizing that might not be always true.
Right, exactly. You've got to minimize and you got to, you know, keep it simple.
Yeah, man. I love it. Oh, I want to start with kind of what you've been doing lately is throwing these amazing community events, helping facilitate not just like the highbrow community itself, but also helping other brands and all of them grow in just the event production and all of that. I have such a level of respect for what you do because it's not easy. All the little details that you got to think of. But what has that been like? Because it's been a little over a year now that you've been doing this, right?
Yeah.
How are you feeling in it?
I'm able to take like, I'm able to catch my breath now. I was talking to you. The summertime just kind of slows down for high level professional events.
Yeah.
People are kind of like saving their budgets for Q3. So Q2, it kind of slows down right after South By for us. Or I should say after like wedding season.
Yeah.
So to speak. It's hot. So I get to catch my breath, but it's been incredible. Corey, it's been awesome. And the part of like helping other people get to produce their events from, you know, from a venue standpoint, but also then being able to, you know, help them with suggestions, you know, how to produce the event from like from the beginning all the way to the end. It's been humbling. It's been a lot of work. It can feel a little bit overwhelming at times because, you know, for some of us in the past, if you've thrown events, you've focused on doing this one event. You've got 90 days to prepare, maybe more. And so you're focused on this one thing. I do 4 a week.
It's unreal, man. How did you ramp up and like adjust to that cadence? Was there a learning curve period?
Oh, yeah. But the best part was like, it was just me. And it was me, Chip, and we had GT, right? Our all-hands guy. And so I think because of that, I was able to ramp up quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously I was able to bring all the gifts and the tools and all the things that I've done in the past with me to this, like, role.
Yeah.
Which it felt like God was like, okay, like, I gave you everything now. Here you go. And just dropped me in this soup. And I just had to, like, figure it out.
Yeah.
And I think I was like, you put me in this role 10 years ago, I fail. But you put me today and it feels like I was made for this.
What do you think you learned in that 10 years that changed that answer?
A lot. A lot. Just that's a whole nother podcast.
10 years a lot. One sentence, yeah. Come on.
I would say troubleshooting, you know, the ability to be calm under pressure. To be able to be malleable and be flexible is huge in this space, right? You have a game plan, and all of a sudden that game plan goes to shit with rain, right? Or with power going out, or maybe some of your vendors didn't show up or didn't provide you with what they said they were going to provide you with, right? So just that calmness under pressure, right? Grace under fire, so to speak. Second is communication. You know, being able to communicate to the various types of people over the last 10 years, you know, whether it was in the fitness industry in New York City, whether it was living in Kuwait and, you know, completely working with like multiple different cultures in that region, and also working high level fitness events, right? And communication was huge, you know, because that is so critical to running events, is to making sure like you're in full communication.
Yeah.
Another thing would be a sense of humor, as we talked about before. If you do not have a sense of humor in this kind of lifestyle, you will be crying more than you're laughing, right? And so you're going to cry anyways, so you might as well cry and just be like, oh shit, what the hell, right? So a sense of humor, because most people are going to freak out. Most people are really going to lose their shit when things aren't working, right? And I'll give you an example. About a little less than a year ago, we had just opened. We're doing this like this influencer's birthday party at our space, and she's awesome, and the people we're working with are amazing, but the music wasn't working. Like, for some reason, the playlist they gave us and the Sonos that we were using in the house, it just wasn't working, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, people are already there. They're showing up. And she's, like, kind of freaking out. Her event coordinator is kind of freaking out.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, no worries. Like, we got this. Like, here you go. Let's play this right now. And we're going to keep working on it. Just kept checking in and kept working on it, and like never like, you know, just made her laugh, was a little playful with them a little bit. And her feedback after that was the thing that she brought up the most. Was like, you never, like, I was freaking out and you were just this like grounded force, and you even made me laugh. And I was like, awesome. Cool.
You're like, win. That's all I want.
Yeah, I was like, cool. Right. And so the ability to like be grounded and communicate well and to be able to solve those problems for other people is going to be critical. And that's what I've took with me.
Yeah, man. I love all of that. I mean, I think I had a chance to witness that firsthand when you invited me to that movie showing, and I'm blanking on the name of the movie, back in April.
Oh, there was a few. Oh my God. Yeah. The Only His Son.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Christian film.
Great film, by the way. And it was funny because I remember, like, as we're sitting there in these chairs waiting for the film to start, and I like can't help but turn over to people and be like, is this disco thing gonna like stop?
Yeah.
Like we're trying to. I thought this was a movie premiere. What are we doing? And then I caught myself and was like, this is actually kind of hilarious. Why am I going to like pass judgment and like let a disco ball, quote unquote, ruin the movie? It's part of the experience. And I love that you even called into it. I think it would be easy to shy away and say, Oh, man, I hope no one notices the spinny disco ball.
It's like, how could you not,
in this
right?
tent, right? How did you learn to start to really call into things that on the surface it might be perceived by other people as like, oh, man, I thought this was like a professional job. Like, yeah. What is this?
Oh, man, it might have been a trauma response as a kid, right? Just kind of knowing like, you know, like, God, it messed up or something. Mm-hmm. But if you remember the movie 8 Mile,
yeah,
with Eminem, and at the end he kind of realizes like they're gonna talk all this shit about you, and so he's like, oh, and he gets this realization, and he like destroys them with all the stuff that they're probably gonna say about him.
Yeah,
right. He just owns it, and it's like. So it's like, just own it. Mm. Just own it. Like, yeah, like, we got this weird disco ball that I can't figure out how to shut off. So here we are. And it just becomes this, like, part of the experience. And you kind of disarm people anyways.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you disarm them immediately by pointing out, like, hey, like, these are my faults. And it just shows, like, you don't take yourself too seriously. You kind of calm other people down. And at the end of the day, people really don't want to judge each other. It's kind of a fault that we do anyways. So it's like you're kind of helping people like take it easy.
Yeah.
A little bit. And it was like, oh, you're right. What was I fucking worried about?
Yeah. I hear a lot of like just working with people to help really like change their expectations around it. Yeah. One of the things I always laugh, man, when I see your IG status on certain days where you're like, returning texts at like this time, or like, I appreciate your patience. And the first time I saw that, I was like, that's genius. I love that, because there's this unspoken expectation in today's culture,
yeah,
where it's like, if I text you, I deserve a text back.
Oh,
right,
my God,
away.
All the time.
And I'm sure I can only imagine with 4 events per week, vendors for everyone, friends, family, and everything else. Yeah. Your phone's got to be pretty busy at times.
It's wild.
What was that like? Was that one of those learned communication things over the last 10 years where you had to really realize, okay, I need to put hard, fast boundaries here for my own sake, because otherwise I'm not going to do any work today. I'm just going to stay on my phone the entirety of the day.
Yeah. And it came from, I used to run a community in New York City. I was running 2 gyms, mm-hmm. and you know, in the CrossFit gyms, they're communities, right? They're community based. So you're dealing with a lot of stuff that happens outside of the workout.
Yeah.
And I remember one night, at that point, I was in a relationship and I was getting text messages at like 10:30 at night from people within my community. And some of them were females, and they were asking me, it was very innocent.
Yeah.
They're asking me about like a workout and this. And my then girlfriend is like, that's kind of rude. And that's also not professional, and that's also like weird that like these people are just kind of like calling you whenever they feel like it and you're answering. I was like, yeah, you're right. Oh, but I was like, you, when we talked about it, I felt I had to respond, mm-hmm. right? Or else like I'm projecting that they're probably freaking out on the other end of that phone if I don't respond.
Yeah.
So not too long ago, I remember a conversation recently with someone where they were like, I texted you. And I was like, I know. And they were like taken aback. And I was like, I know. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, I'll get back to you when I feel it's appropriate.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's literally like, because if you remember, I don't know if you remember this, but we used to have phones without caller ID. And it was just a voicemail. And it was like, it was great. You left the house and was like, I don't have any way to contact you.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'll just get back to you whenever like I can. And so I was like, what's wrong with that approach still? Nothing. There's nothing wrong with that approach, right?
Yeah.
So it's just giving people the expectations like, hey, this is when I'm available to get back to you. I'll get back to you shortly.
Yeah. And I think it's the better job we can like proactively communicate that. It goes in both ways. But yeah, I love the, like in coaching, that's what I found to be challenging at times too, because it's like, coaching is ever present all the time.
For sure.
In every area of life, you know what I mean? There's or content or right. social media. Like, it's so easy to let all of the things be all the things.
Yeah. Don't you feel like you teach people how you want to be treated?
Yeah.
Right. We teach people how to treat us. And I think even how to communicate with us is very important. So I had a person recently, and she was just joking, but she texted me. She was like, something like, forever not responding to my messages.
Mm.
And I wrote back immediately. I was like, and that's the fastest way to never get a response back. Joking, but at the same time, like,
yeah,
that condescending will never get a response back.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, it's like when you're – it's fighting that initial, like, lash out. Like, yeah. That's the behavior that I think is – so we weren't going to talk about healing, but that's the stuff that I feel like yeah. is a wound from some portion sure. of life maybe. Yeah. And it's just showing up. And for the most part, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt where, like, they don't actually mean that in totally. That moment. It's just emotionally charged.
That's all it is.
And recognizing that, like, hey, this isn't personal. Yeah. This isn't, like, a personal attack on – James being this rude dude who never responds to text messages. It's just like, oh, James has boundaries and respects himself and respects the space and wants to give a response to me the best thought that he can. Maybe I should be more like that.
thank you for that. I mean, yeah, it's intentional, mm-hmm. you know, and I think as I've learned to be more intentional with my boundaries, you'd be surprised at how many people fall off very quickly.
Yeah.
Because they don't have boundaries and they don't understand boundaries. And sometimes it's great because then they learn and you yeah. teach other people like, hey, this is okay to have boundaries. But I think for the most part, people, they just choose not to deal with it.
Well, I found that with drinking, oftentimes people like when I chose to stop drinking about yeah. 2.5 years ago, I had a lot of people in my life originally like one try to like test that boundary and, mm. and push it. And then you always hear, right? Like, oh, you stop drinking, you're going to like lose all of your friends. But really I think it weeds out a lot of the quality and the character of the people that you have in your life based off of how they respond to you expressing that, hey, this is like what I need.
Yeah.
And if you can't respect that, then like, yeah, we need a little bit more distance and space between it.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, it's so true. It's just, it's guidelines. It's yeah. principles, right? Like values, like these things that we talk about all the time about having them a part of our lives and they help us. They're like these little bumpers, right? These yeah. little bumpers when we kind of get off track, like we've got these principles and guidelines that kind of help us get on there. But when other people come into our lives and we have to share them, sometimes people just aren't ready for that.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to receive it. And so it allows those people to kind of find themselves out, so to speak.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to put it. How did you start to learn over the years? And I'd be curious as like really recently since, I mean, I still remember coming to Austin, visiting for the first time, going shooting with you. And it's really cool to see, you know, where we both are in retrospect to back then to now. Was there a process in that time where you really felt like values were shifting, realigning for you? And if so, what was that process? And like, how would you maybe recommend or suggest someone like explore values in that yeah. sense in their life?
Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of the values today, I look back on and it's like, whoa, those are a lot of things I valued as a child or I learned to value as a child. And they came from sports. You know, I loved playing sports because it taught me a lot of the things I wasn't learning at home.
Mm.
You know, my father wasn't an athlete at all. My mother wasn't an athlete at all. Although they gave me some great values and some great skill sets, sports taught me things that like I wasn't going to learn in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the last few years, whenever things would start to get like rigid or would start to feel resistance around things, or even like the way people are like reacting around me and mm-hmm. responding and maybe their own BS, that's when I'm often like, something's off. Something's off. Let me look in the mirror here. Let me find out what's going on. And oftentimes I'm like, oh, it's time to reevaluate what I truly value in the world. Because if there's some resistance going on around me and there's people around me reacting and responding, but I'm the common denominator in there, then I need to figure out whether those people value the same things I value. And do I even value the things that I thought I used to? So I did that recently, actually. And I just sat there and I was like, let me look at my values and some of the principles that I was living on. And I was like, oh, that doesn't really make sense today. That doesn't really align up with where I am. That's just a fucking buzzword that I would fucking say on Instagram. Like, I don't fucking really believe that. And then it's amazing. Like, you'll just chew off the fat and you just kind of like get everything out. And I've got three.
Mm.
And it was like, I had like seven or eight, whatever. It was like, now I have three. And they may change in a year or 2 years. But those three now are like, I really value those three things. And it's
what are they?
First one's hard work and consistency, or consistent hard work. Like, I realized, I was like, I fucking love the ability to go in and work hard. Mm. And we talked about this. I feel like we're missing that physical component in our jobs and in our everyday lives. And, you know, a lot of us play sports. Either play a sport or work out. But even then, it's like we don't have enough of it, because that's like an hour.
Yeah.
Right? Like, think about the rest of the time. So I love the ability to, like, go in and, like, move some shit around for work. Like, there's a physical labor component that I love about events that I don't like to delegate. Like, I love to do myself. So hard work, but being consistent with it. You know, I think it's truly important not to just, like, work really hard and then all of a sudden you're dead for, like, a week.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's consistent hard work. Number two is humility. Like, having humility, you know, in the face of God.
Mm.
It's so critical for me. It's so important to value, like, when people try to, like, whether it's criticize me or give me recognition, if I'm getting criticized, it's a lesson, right? And take that lesson and be like, cool, what could I do better? If I'm getting recognized and I'm getting, if I'm getting all this glory, then I need to give that glory to God.
Mm.
For me, it's like, thank you, God's great, man. Like, I, you know, whatever I do great is because of my love and because of my devotion to my faith. That's where it all comes from. That's where my strength comes from. If I'm getting criticized and I'm getting stones thrown at me, it's thank you, cool, I'll do better.
Yeah.
Right. It's just having that humility, because the ego would just kind of like wrap us up. And it's like, immediately, do we get defensive? And if we're getting all this praise, and I get it a lot, it happens to any of us that who are in the public eye. You're great. Oh my God, we love you. What would this place do without you? Your events are the best. Like, and if you buy into that, it's poison. Because then no one else can tell you how to do it better.
Mm.
Right. And it's complete poison. So humility is second for me. And then last and not least is faith and grace.
Mm.
Like, having tremendous amount of faith in the unknown and just knowing it's going to work out, knowing, like, no matter what, it's going to work out. And grace through that process is so tremendous for me.
Dude, I love all of those.
Thank you.
And to circle back to that first one, I've been loving, and truthfully, I feel like half the stuff, not even more than half the stuff that I've started with Forever Athlete has truthfully just been for me, like, selfishly for me, because I missed it in my life. And I just needed an excuse to bring some people along with me in doing these things. But then recognizing, like, oh crap, this is really beneficial for them as well. It's been really the coolest thing. And one of those elements has been, like, I missed playing. I missed just, like, playing for the sake of playing. I went through that phase where post-swim, let's bodybuild, let's follow this strict rugged plan. I did the marathon training stuff. I've done a few races. And now I'm very much, the past year plus, I've been very drawn to, like, finding this duality of when do I like step into that structure, but then also intentionally stepping into that play. And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on just kind of that concept of when do you turn to each? Because I think with too much of one, you lose sight of the other, and vice versa. And they both have, obviously, they show up in very different ways. And
yeah,
depending which one you prioritize and value more, it probably creates some chaos in your
life.
Oh,
yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the dance that we all play every day, right? It's like, how much do you, what's the right dosage?
Yeah.
Right. For, and it's going to be different for everyone. And it's also going to be different for us in different seasons. Right. So someone was like, not criticizing me, but like kind of giving me a hard time that I've been so like focused on what I'm doing for work. Right. That I don't give my friends more time, which is so weird because my work is play. like I throw parties for a living. You know, so it's like, you can come anytime and come hang out with me. It's a dance, you know, and it's a dance that you have to do every day. And I don't like this like idea of like work should always be play and you should find a thing that like sometimes work is work.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so interesting. Like when I'm focused at work and like late night, there's like some, it's chaos. And I am like making sure like everyone is safe inside. Things are happening. Like people don't realize the chaos that's happening outside and the people that are trying to get in. And I am focused and people, and mostly women will come up to me and they'll be like, are you okay? Is there anything I can do? Like, are you stressed? And I'm just like, nope, I am focused. I love what I'm doing right now. Like I'm fine. And typically I'll use that as a coaching moment with a lot of my friends and be like, look, like when a man is like in his zone, it may come off as stress, but I'm in just complete focus right now. I'm like in the zone and I'm loving this right now.
Yeah.
So I think it's a dance, you know, I think it's like, how much play do you have? I may have lost track of that question, but
you're good.
I get it. So I figured it out. Thanks. you can go back and rewind all that. Or just erase it.
We'll leave it in there. I think there's good nuggets in it.
Cool. So, oh man, like I talked about this as a young boy, not every sport I played was organized. Right. And for me, it was so critical that I played every sport, right? We played football when it was cold out, right? We played basketball in the fall and when it was warm out in New York, like there's a basketball court everywhere. We played baseball whenever the fuck we wanted. It was just like grab a glove, grab a sponge ball, and just either play catch, you know, play wiffle ball, play whatever, play manhunt. Like, and I think it helped me tremendously in the three sports that I was really active in, which was basketball, track, and baseball. So to be able to play all of these different sports, right? Like if we didn't play, like I played football. Right. And I didn't play organized football, but we played football in the park. Being able to take a hit, being able to like hit someone, even though I was a skinny runt, but being able to like put my body into someone, I mean, that transfers. You know, you learn how to fall.
Yeah.
Right. You learn how to fall. So, like, I was very rarely ever hurt because I would, you learned how to fall in the park. Right. You learned how to take a hit. So, I think playing is so important for us as adults. And it's like, it's got to be intentional. You know, it's got to be intentional because think about your schedule. Most people are working 8 to 10 hours a day. Most people are working six days a week. Then your social schedules get like crazy, right? So it's like, when are you intentionally like going to play and shut your mind off? You know, and I think you do a great job of doing things for the community, like flag football. Like just putting these little opportunities for people to play where it's a couple of hours. And you're just going to play and just going to shut it off and you get to be a kid again. So I think being intentional and just looking for things that like allow you to just not think so much, but just get in your body and just go play.
Yeah. That's why I, like, that's the thought process behind most of the events that I do.
Yeah. It's great.
And it's not from a, oh, I'm lazy and like don't want to organize like some massive tournament. It actually, you would probably know this too. It's like sometimes even things that look like fairly loosely put together takes a heck of a lot of organization and coordinating.
So much.
You know, I mean, you know how much effort goes into getting 20 people in, in a given space, if not more, on any given Saturday morning, right? Like, I'm excited, man. In July, we're doing a I'm doing a field day, teaming up with Zach from ATX Sprint Squad, and we're just like literally, it's just going to be a morning of games.
Yeah,
everything from sack races.
When
to
is that?
22nd of July.
July.
It's a Saturday morning.
Something's there.
Okay. If you're around.
Well, I would. I've been wanting to do something with Highbrow, so let's talk, because maybe that's something where I can get my community involved.
Heck yeah, man.
I mean, you guys are already doing all the hard work, so there you go.
Yeah,
why not piggyback on it?
We'll make it an easy lift, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
No, but I love that stuff.
Thanks, man. I want to circle back to one other thing you said in your values. As really that second one, I love the humility and the ability to remember that he is with us in the good and the bad. Mm. I think it's easy in the default when we're getting criticized to turn and be like, yo, bro, like, what the heck? I thought you had my back. Like, why are you letting him talk to me like that?
Right.
And then vice versa, and the good being like, I forgot about him. Like, it's not me. Yeah, it's me. It's very human to have
so
both of those kind of responses. In what ways have you, it sounds like, really learned to just still feel but receive neutrally?
Hmm. I mean, it came from making the mistake.
Mm.
And going down both roads, right? And I think one of the biggest lessons I had was in, again, running that same community. And I went into that super humble. It's why I got the opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I met Cammie and Dave Lipson at a seminar. Super humble. So grateful to them. And I think Dave saw that. And Dave was like, dude, you should reach out to a buddy of mine. He's opening up this gym. I think you'd be great. And I go into that and the same thing, just like, I'll do any job.
Yeah.
Mind you, I had been already in the industry 10 plus years. I had owned my own gym. So here I am starting over again to work in this CrossFit gym. And I was cleaning floors. I was watching it.
Yeah.
I was doing it all, right? And so I went into it super humble. I get the job. Things are going great. We triple the membership. We're killing it. We're like the top gym in New York City. And I'm just getting all the glory. Like, oh my God, you're fantastic. We love your programming. What would this gym do without you? All of it, right?
Yeah.
And so I bought into that hype. And then my mentor, Eric Froelich, who was continuing trying to pour into me and saying, hey, like, you should maybe look at it this way. And maybe, you know, what if we did it this way? But I couldn't hear him.
Mm-hmm.
I was already buying into all the hype that people were telling me how great I was, right? I drank that poison. And so there was no more growth opportunities. And so I went from being super humble to being in my ego. And we just, one, we butted heads. Two, I just stopped my learning.
Yeah.
And I had a very big rude awakening from it. I lost that community. I mean, I decided to move on, but we got, our relationship got to a point where we weren't going to be able to continue to work together. And it was on me. So I had to move on. And so I always look at that as like a constant thing that I tell people when they're coming up is like, never buy into your own hype. Mm. Because then you just stop your ability to learn. And so that lesson for me is huge today. And even the other thing, you know, taking criticism, it's easy to throw up the walls and get defensive. It's easy to, like, when someone's trying to give you some feedback, it's easy for us to be like, well, here's why I did it. You don't understand.
Yeah.
Let me explain to you. Why do you have to explain anything?
You're telling me mansplaining doesn't always work?
Exactly.
So, I don't know if it ever has.
I don't know if it ever has. But, you know, even in getting criticism, it's like, take it. Just receive it. Thank you. Okay. Cool. Not all of it, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Some of it is just somebody wanting to be heard. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just want to be heard. And that's okay. I can take it, right? I can take it. And so I can receive it, take it, and understand, like, in that, there's something that I can take away and do better. There was a disconnect for this person. Where can I maybe try to close that gap?
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, you're not going to make everybody happy. So you've got to be able to take it with a grain of salt. But it's like, that's kind of where for me it was like, once I got recommitted to my faith, I realized where's the fuel, right? Where's the fuel? And it was like, grace under fire, getting criticism, fantastic, take the lesson. It's almost like when my when someone would, like a teacher or a coach would kind of like be getting on me, but they were well within their right, and my mom just kind of like, listen, they know what they're talking about. Listen. So I feel like God's like that right now. Like, hey, man, like, okay, there you go. Like, you thought you knew it all, but there you go. Take a listen. And the opposite way, when I am getting all the praise and I am getting it, I know it's not all me.
Yeah.
I have a team. I have people who work with me. I have people who made this possible. I have mentors. I have leaders. I have guides who have poured into me. So I have that knowledge. It's not all me.
Yeah.
So just take it with, you know, take, thank you. Oh my God, I appreciate it. But, you know, God is great, isn't he?
He's awesome.
Yeah,
he's
and fantastic. That's kind of how I respond a lot. When I do receive praise, it's thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know, glory be to, I give my team, you know, I redeflect and I give my team the praise that they well deserve.
Yeah, I think it's so easy in those pivotal moments, especially when obviously emotion gets involved, and it's easy to sit on a couch and be like, yeah, man, like in those moments, you know, it's this is what I do. This is what it should be.
Come to me. Give me all the glory. Tell me how great I am.
Exactly. But it's easy to have let emotion really take the wheel. And it's my, like, I see the, like the well intention behind stoicism being like, you should just like neutral, like stoic, take it and don't internalize it, but just feel it and like move through it. And to a degree, I think it works until it doesn't.
Yeah.
I've realized I think the only thing that truly actually helps with that and actually helps moving through it is in those moments, challenging yourself to instead turn towards Christ, instead turn towards your relationship with God. And like, how can you pour into that? In what ways do you do that? And has that changed over the years, I'm sure?
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, having Christ in my life is what allows me to kind of feel it.
Yeah.
But then unload it. So I'm not holding on to it and I'm not harboring it. And so I think that's
great. You don't have to carry it.
Well, that's the thing. People think just because you're feeling it, that means you have to hold on to it and you got to live with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. Like, it can pass, and it, the way it passes is just like grace. You understand, like, you know, you can forgive yourself because you can ask for that forgiveness. And, you know, I know there are going to be people here who aren't Christian, so I don't want to, like, that's my personal relationship.
Yeah.
Right? That's my personal views. But the way I see it is, like, I have this great relationship and I have this thing that allows me to feel what's happening as a man right there in that moment, but be able to take it in and then be able to pass it on and be able to deal with it and then keep moving forward. And that works for me. And it's funny, like, there are so many people who criticize what we believe in and who'll say it doesn't work and all that. That's fine. That's great. This works for me. This is my personal perspective, and it's proven through my life to work. That's all I can share.
I was about to say, how many relationships have you had throughout your lifetime where people around you might not approve or they have their own opinions of it?
Totally.
But in the moments, it works for you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, it's not a one-to-one, like they're not directly correlated, but I think the same can be true when you're talking about a faith relationship. It's recognizing one that looks different for everyone.
Yeah.
That is completely yours. It's not linear. It's not a, you've been doing it, you've been going to the thing every Sunday for X amount of times, therefore you are, like, you're on level 5 versus someone who's on level 20.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be, it's like everyone's relationship looks different.
And it does.
I will say, I think what I've come to know is just our sense of self. And this is where a favorite book of mine, man, I posted it a few days ago because it has come up in conversation a lot, is this book called Why God Won't Go Away. It's the neuroscience of religion, and it takes a look at a plethora of religions. It's not just Christianity, even though that's God's in the title of the book. For but sure. Its whole basis is, and like we talk about on the show a lot, is this concept of flow. And one of the cornerstones of flow is this idea that what's going on in your brain is you lose yourself as part of something bigger than yourself. Mm. And each time we do that, and humans crave that, because our sense of self gets solidified more as we come down from that. And so we're constantly chasing, and sometimes we chase that in the wrong places, so to speak, or in places that are just immediate, like, desire and dopamine hits for that specific moment. And you can genuinely start to feel over time, like, what is actually serving and pouring into me and developing that sense of self that is actually true and foundational versus a, like, ever fleeting thing. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how many, especially in today's day and age, how many humans have never experienced what this, like, flow just feels like, right? And because I was able to obtain that as a child playing sports.
Yeah.
Right? Where you don't have all of these thoughts. I mean, we didn't even have social media back then, right? Like, we just barely had video games, which lets you know how old I am. But you don't have all of this stuff in your head. Mm. And so at that moment, you're not thinking about your parents. You're not thinking about even your coach. You're not trying to impress anybody. You're just one with your team and this moment, and you're just in this complete zone. Mm. And so I feel for people who've never actually had an opportunity to experience that, because it's one of the fucking greatest feelings you ever feel in your life, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, whatever you're doing, the ball just goes into the hoop. You see the baseball and it looks like 10 times what it normally looks like. You know, you're diving and you just like, oh man, the pool, everything just feels good.
Yeah.
That can happen in our everyday lives now too, but unfortunately, we've got too many distractions. And that's why I was like, there's something about shutting off your mind and going and doing some hard manual physical labor. So not too long ago, I was just out at Highbrow and I had my headphones on and I'm just like jamming out to some music, like old school fucking classic rock, right? And I'm just raking leaves.
Yeah.
I'm just raking leaves and I'm moving some stuff around, and the owner's brother comes out and he's like, dude, don't you have someone you pay to do that? And I was just laughing. I was like, hey, man, when you get to a certain age, you're just going to really appreciate that we can still do this. And I think that's where, you know, it's easy to find that. It's hard to find that flow. I could be wrong, but it's hard to find that flow in really mental focused jobs sometimes, because it's almost, there's so much mental gymnastics you have to do. Like, you're like four problems down. You've got to think back sometimes. But I know there's people who do it. Like, there's mathematicians who just like find this like aura. They just find this thing that they can tap into. So I'm curious about, like, in academics, like, how do they find that flow where they can kind of get out of their way a little bit and just tap into this force?
Well, you hit a big one there. It's so to preface, you're right. Most people don't feel this, or at least feel it with frequency in their day-to-day life. Yeah. The average knowledge worker, as I was taught,
that's a good one.
It's
the
average
point.
The average knowledge worker gets about 8 hours of flow a month.
Okay.
That's not a lot.
No.
And like, you hear that, and when I heard that originally, I was like, but most of us are working at least 40 hours a week, right? Like,
right.
What the heck? You're telling me one-twentieth of my hours, I'm getting like that sense of feeling, fulfillment, accomplishment, your productivity, your effectiveness is like through the roof, and then the other 19/20ths I'm just like like a shell of my potential self. And so that's why a lot of people feel like they have all this potential in the world, but they're not living up to it. And it's, you hit on a couple of different things. So there's, without turning this into a whole like flow masterclass, there's 22 different flow triggers, 10 of which are individual, 12 of which are group focused. So you can find flow in like just yourself, like you did raking leaves. You can find flow in conversations with two or more people involved. And one of the classic things that is needed that unfortunately isn't the case for a majority of people is one, like clear boundaries. You need full focus on the task at hand. So limiting those distractions, limiting the time spent on social media. Maybe it's like I removed all social media apps from my home screen. Yeah. I have to go in and like type out Instagram in full and then search the app store and then hope the app store loads and then click on the icon and then go in. And it's those steps where it's like, oh, okay, now I need to make sure like I've had now enough time to check my intention of why am I going on here in the first place?
Yeah.
And I'm way less likely than to end up in a 10-minute scroll. And the other thing is like why it's so challenging. Flow comes in four cycles. So there's a struggle phase. We all go through it when we're starting any task at hand. Our brain has to like dust off the cobwebs, work up, get that a clear handle on the problem really at hand, get a grasp of, okay, like this is what's going on here. I have the full picture. Then we need to go into a release. We need to take a step away. That's why oftentimes people have that epiphany moment in the shower or like going for that
walk.
You've given the problem enough space to breathe so that when you come back to it, you're able to ease into flow and just boom, knock it out, whatever it may be. And then on the backside is recovery because flow is a high energy expenditure state. It's why like after this conversation, I didn't really have anything planned right after. I knew I needed to like downregulate, come down for a second.
Same.
And so it's like when we start to understand the frameworks and the triggers, we can then start to become way more intentional with setting up those guardrails that you kind of talked about earlier. That's the importance of the boundaries. That's the importance of the really these scalable rules that allow you to play. Why do athletes play a good game? There needs to be rules in place.
Yeah.
There's no rules. Like, I love watching football. Football is organized chaos because of the rules and the penalties and there's like repercussions, right?
Right.
Some might argue it would be more fun if we took all the rules out. It's dumb that there's only four downs. It's dumb, like whatever it is. But it would be total chaos. It wouldn't be anything. No one would enjoy it. It like the rules are what make it what it is. And so we can start to develop a relationship with rules and structure that serves us, I think, in our lives, whether that be faith-based, like it all depends on your values. That allows you to then thrive within that structure. But without structure, what usually happens, like you said earlier, it's like if I don't have boundaries or I'm very porous with my boundaries, I'm going to be very triggered when you uphold a boundary.
Yep.
And I'm going to be like, I don't like James. No.
Yeah.
He's bad.
You just described running a social club.
There you go.
That
flow cycle, that's how I run all my events.
Interesting.
That's how workouts work too.
Same.
Think about it. You go through a warm up, you like do some mobility, you release, look at the workout, get set up, you go into flow for the bulk of the workout, and then you cool down, recover.
So two things I've run, like workouts, obviously.
Yeah.
Sales calls, or how I teach sales, right? You build a relationship, right? You build a rapport. You just ask them like mindless questions. You know, then you kind of set the framework a little bit. Then you go back to asking some like easy layup questions to kind of get the people talking like, hey, you know, like talk to me about your siblings, whatever, to kind of like clear out space so that you can get to the good stuff.
Yeah.
But running a social club. So I found that like there are social clubs that we're all familiar with that are like very rigid.
Mm.
They have very strict guidelines. Like you can't take pictures. You can't. You know, you have like all of these guidelines in how to operate. And so human beings naturally want to break those rules.
Yeah.
Right. Naturally. It's just a normal human thing. And then there's social clubs out there who have none. Or there's bars or clubs that have no guidelines. Right. And so it's chaos. And like they're constantly tossing people out and people are fighting or whatever. And so I realized, I was like, okay, great. We're going to have guidelines. we're going to have a lot of gray area because you're dealing with human beings, but we're just going to have these basic guidelines on how to operate here and use values in those, right? So that people understand, okay, there's so much freedom here, like at Highbrow, there's a lot of freedom. I think most people know that. We have a lot of freedom in there. But what people don't understand is that there are guidelines because with freedom becomes tremendous amount of responsibility.
100%. Right?
Like, especially when you're dealing with humans and all kinds of stuff. So it's so important. You just talked about it. Like, you just nailed a social club.
Well, I was about to say, it's like, I spent 6 years at a country club. One of the rules there, one of the it was a heavily enforced and focused guideline was no cell phones on property. Like, meaning you couldn't take a phone call.
Right.
And obviously certain members and employees, staff, AKA like all the young 20 somethings and teenagers that are like, my phone is glued to my hand. What do you mean I can't use it here? Would balk at that rule. And it's like, but those are the things that make that place special. Mm. Now, you might not agree with it, but you gotta, that's what is a brand identity. That's what is like what actually makes a place something worth standing for.
Right.
And feeling for you to be a part of something, it has to also draw a line at like what's not a part of this.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like without that rule, it's a coffee shop. It's a public golf course. It's a, but because of that rule, you can charge $92,000 as an initiation fee and have a monthly dues of over $1,000, and people line up out the door to pay that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like guidelines, right? We talk about guidelines. So we have a guideline or kind of in this like rule. It's like no strangers, right? And you may hear that and be like, what? What do you mean no strangers? Well, what we mean by that is that when you're bringing your guest in, don't go out and just meet some random person at a bar and then bring them home.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we need to know who's coming in our door because there is tremendous amounts of freedom. So in order for us to keep people safe, your guest should be people you know. Because, again, you're bringing in people who maybe have never been here before. They've never experienced this kind of freedom before. There's a certain way that we want our women to feel loved, seen, and you know, appreciated. And sometimes people don't understand that. And they come from, you know, they're used to going to a bar. They're used to going to these clubs where it's just like, you know, they're just looking to hook up. And that's just not tolerated in our space. So we say no strangers, meaning like, hey, like, we want you to bring in good people that you know so that the other person brings in good people that they know, and now you all become friends again. But there's no strangers.
I love that approach. I didn't realize the hyper-intentionality behind it, but I couldn't agree more, man. I think that's, it's what makes it something worth standing for in a lot of ways. And it will draw the right people into that, and it will weed out the people that that aren't meant to be there in the first place. And,
unfortunately, you know, as we have to accept that there's just people that you'll never get along with.
Yeah.
And there's just people who will never, they just don't belong. They belong to something else, and that's okay. We just have to accept that.
I had that with this podcast a year ago. I was making some TikToks of like trying to do some promotion, and I did a podcast or a TikTok that was like, these are the five podcasts that I listened to that like really helped my growth through my show at number three, and had a list of list other shows in there.
Yeah.
So, and all the comments were, anyone else notice that it's all men on this? Like,
oh boy,
where is it? And I was like, well, that's worked me. But like, hey, I see, and like, I see where your heart's at, and like, I appreciate the challenge. I'm going to listen to some female hosted podcasts, and I'm going to share those. So then I go and share those, and then it's like 50-50 mixed bag. Some people are like, oh, this is awesome, so cool to see, glad I'm gonna go check these out. And then some other people start to notice, well, where are the people of color, where's the diversity in the
right?
And I was like, I mean, again, you're right, but at the same time, I can't help but like throw my hands up and laugh, and like I will never be able to appease them. And by me making this piece of content to if it is for a form of self-validation, yes, that's going to be very frustrating.
Yeah.
And I'll take that personally. But if it's me doing what I can to try to be a better person, I'll be like, all right, you know, I hear you. I see the challenge. I will do what I can. But like at the end of the day, we're also all entitled to like our own like preferences.
Right.
And there's nothing inherently like wrong or bad about them, I would argue.
We've become a society because the world has gotten so small because of the social media and because of the internet, where we think we're supposed to like and appreciate and accept everything. And it's like, this world is, I think those people who like really feel that have never traveled.
Mm.
They don't know or realize how big this world is, and even this country, right? And there's a reason why we're all so different, right? Like, there's a reason why in Texas they think differently than there is in California,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, if you think about just two people who were born, right, and those two people, they think completely different. They act completely different. They talk completely different. Okay, look at how much space is in between those two people. Instead of villainizing one another for not thinking the same, what if we just gave each other grace and been like, oh, that's because that's how they do things in California.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. That's how they do things in Kuwait. That's what I had to accept. I didn't go to Kuwait and try to change Kuwait to like be what I want it to be. Like, whoa, what do you mean? Why are you going to listen to EDM music? Why are you going to listen to hip hop? What are you talking about? What do you got? You don't listen to hip hop? Why you don't like hip hop? What do you got? What do you got against hip hop? I think those fucking people who think that way, they literally have never left what they left. And honestly, most people are just full of shit. That's it. That's the way that most people are full of shit, because in their own hearts, they don't live up to what they try. They don't live up to their own standards and what they try to hold other people up to. And that's just the world these days. Most people do not hold themselves to a standard that they try to make other people up to. And that's why we love to tear down our heroes.
Mm. Such a good point. I think it's the duality and the dangerous game of social at times. You know what I mean? Like it's a fine line to walk, a tightrope at times.
Yeah, I think social media has just magnified this human thing that we do. We've done it since the beginning of time, right? We build up people, we build up our heroes, we build up these legends, and then the moment they kind of step out of that like little thing that we've built them up to, we want to tear them down. And it's just a human thing that we do.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's unpopular opinion, but some of my favorite sports figures and stuff over the years are not the ones that are like just historic rise, no fall, but I love watching Tiger. And I think there's a human element too to like watching a Tiger Woods, watching a Michael Phelps come back, like after those things, because we on a human to human level, we recognize that is within all of us. We can pass all the judgment we want of the decisions coming out and being like, oh my God, they're a horrible person. How could you ever do that when you're in X position? You look at John Morant with the Grizzlies this past year and the two incidents with guns, and it can be very easy to pass judgment and say, you're a professional athlete, you represent the NBA, you're the potential face of the, you could argue, definitely face of the franchise in Memphis, potentially like one of the faces of the NBA future. That was dumb. Why would you ever do that? But there's also that human element to recognize, you know, he might be struggling with something. He doesn't know better. No. He's still 23 years old.
He's a kid.
And
still
like
developing.
He's learning as he goes, and he deserves some grace in all of that.
Right.
Does that mean it will cost him a few million dollars? Yeah.
Yeah. And think about all the people who are casting stones at Ja.
Yeah.
Think about that. None of them were ever 22, 23 years old with that level of fame and come from zero to now having this unlimited bank account. None of the people that are casting stones understand what that's like, right? And it's the same thing with Michael Jordan. I love to use Michael Jordan a lot because everyone wanted Michael to be this like hero, right? He just wanted to play basketball. He's just what made Michael great was that he was this like incredible competitor, but it also didn't make him a great human. Mm-hmm. Right? Like if you take that attitude and you try to apply it to like a corporate job, people would be like, he's a terrible person, but it made him the ultimate professional basketball player. Mm-hmm. Right. But everyone wanted him to be this like savior for us in real life. And Michael was like, I want none of that. I just want to be who I am. And he was this like incredible killer on the court. And that's why we look at him as the greatest basketball player of all time. But a lot of that didn't transfer to everyday life. And so we put these people on pedestals, and the moment they can't live up to some crazy standard, which we'll never live up to ourselves, we just want to talk shit about them. We want to, right? Because it makes us feel good, like, about ourselves.
The gambling addiction.
Sex
addiction. Like, whatever it may be.
All this stuff, right? Like, it's the best. Like, you ever see those memes where it's like, you know, the guy's like bad-mouthing somebody and he's sitting on the couch with like a fuck ton of like Doritos and all this shit. That's literally it. Like, we're trying to hold each other to these standards in which we don't hold ourselves.
Yeah.
And I mean, quite frankly, that's why I left the coaching industry.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother podcast, but that's why I left the coaching industry, because it became this like weird, the last few years on Instagram and social media became this weird of like, I'm going to tell you how to live your life. Here are all the rules to living a great life. I want to tell other people what to do. I'm the old, and it's like 90% of us don't even live up to that standard. Mm-hmm. And it was so weird the last few years that social media became this place of like, tell other people what to do porn.
Yeah.
Right. And the coaching industry is famous for like so many people who can't make it in the real world, who've never done anything in the real world. And then all of a sudden they want to tell everyone else
how to do it,
Right. Like, how many people became relationship coaches who like never had a successful relationship,
but they read it, they read Attached, and they were like, this is
how many people became business coaches who've never owned a real business.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they've never stepped foot. They've never signed a lease for a brick and mortar gym or never a brick and mortar space in their life. Right. But they want to tell everybody else how to run a business, but because they took a couple of courses. And we became this society in which it's like, just because I know something, that means, just because I learned something, that means I know it.
Yeah.
Instead of, ooh, I've experienced this something, so now I can talk to you through whatever my own perception.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't tell advice anymore. I don't give advice. I think of advice is either given or taken, but perspective is shared. And so I think when someone comes to me and they're like, hey, man, like, I need your advice on something, I'm like, talk to me about what you're talking about. And let me see if I can offer some perspective. Because if I give you advice and you go and do it and it doesn't work, well, then who's wrong?
It's going to blame on you.
Right. Like there's so many other factors.
I'm just pointing at you.
There's so many other factors in like why that advice didn't work. Right. It's two different people. It's two different circumstances. It's completely so many things, but perspective is like, okay, I could see why he thought that way. Okay. And you can take a bit and you can take that a little bit, or maybe it just allows you to look at the table just a little differently than what you looked at it before. But the answers are all within inside us anyways.
Yeah.
So giving advice, and that's why like I don't do it anymore. And I stopped doing it on social media because 90% of the time I was just projecting anyways. That's all I was doing. Like, I just felt something that day in my own life that I was missing out on, that I wasn't living up to, that I wasn't feeling. Cool. You should do this, and you should do this, and that. And it's like, great. Now I just told everybody else what I'm not fucking doing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And it's like, and you wonder why people don't come to the business then and submit the inquiries and all the things, right? I mean, it's funny. I'm very grateful for the coaching industry and the containers.
I am.
You know, like brought, I mean, that's what brought you and I together and this beautiful friendship that we've been able to share over the years. I think I started to notice it really early on, even in that I love the Empower container that we got to meet in. I thought it was something was definitely off when it was like 60 of us, all coaches in some regard, going through this course. And I feel like it happens almost in every class. There's a handful of people, and every single one that 2-3 weeks in pivot, and now all of a sudden they're a business coach. And you're like, wait, what? You didn't come in with that intention, but now you started to see a framework and you're like, oh, well, that's actually easier. I'm just going to copy the framework that I'm being given. And so I've paid X amount of dollars for this knowledge.
Yeah.
Now I'm just going to spew this knowledge as if it's my own and ask for the same. I'm going to make my money back and more. And it misses the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, the coaching industry helped. Prior to 2020.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic, it still is a fantastic industry, right? I'm speaking in general. There's still tremendous amount of people doing great work. However, over the last 2-3 years, it's definitely got to a place where it's not as successful as one may think it is.
That's the same thing with the creator economy.
Yeah.
As well that you've seen.
And it became almost like an MLM sort of thing. Mm. And the containers that I've been in, I've met some incredible people. So my biggest takeaways of these containers were like, I met some incredible people. I did get some helpful information. I did learn a couple of things. And I definitely learned a lot of what not to do.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
By watching others, like, you know, just like, I saw that. I'm going to have grace for you, man, but I'm not going to do that.
I joke with people now. I like some content that I do see in that space. I can pick up on it really easily.
Yeah.
You don't see it in the guru's eyes. And you're like, it looks like there's like an internal gun to his head and he's sharing this. It's probably not real.
You know, that happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, that happened to me.
I think it happens to all of us. Yeah. I felt that as a creator. Yeah. And I think it's in those moments where you get to challenge yourself and redirect your focus and say like, is this truthfully in alignment or am I trying to force something? And sometimes fighting for something, you can still be super passionate and fight for something and give it space. Mm. Absolutely. It doesn't mean fighting for it doesn't always mean suffocating and like going harder, which is a really, I'm stubborn, man. Like that's a really hard lesson to learn as a former athlete coming from you want to work at something. You just keep doing it. You
right.
Fucking keep doing rep after rep after rep until you get it right. And then you go home. But that's, again, like 1+1 doesn't always equal 2 in when you take that belief system and apply it to a totally different environment.
I mean, and that's the world we live in because we've allowed ourselves, especially in this country, to open ourselves up to all of these different schools of thought and ways of living.
Yeah.
Right. And that's became the United States project was it's this incredible project where I look at it as the United States as an art piece. Right. Like we're not done by any stretch of the means. This is art. Right. There's no right or wrong answer. We brought in all of these schools of thought, all of these ways of doing things, and they're all not going to mesh well. Mm-hmm. Right. So you have this school of thought of be an athlete and you go hard and you do it until like finally exhausted and you go home and you see that works for you. That works. And then you get around your family or you get around your friends who don't have that, or you go to work later in life and you go to work and that work environment isn't like that. That's a struggle right there. Cause you're like, I live this. I know this works for me.
Yeah.
This works. But everyone around you is like, I want no part of that, man. This is what works for me. And then you have, so the biggest challenge is like, how do you grow? How do you become a little bit more malleable and saying, okay, well that did work for me for that.
Mm.
What else could work?
Yeah. I talked about it on a few episodes back. Actually, I did a solo episode on around money mindset and like dissected takeaways from a money mindset intensive that I did with our dear friend, Nick Pags.
Love that.
And
I miss Nick's bags.
We kind of came up with this theory that, you know, our beliefs are oftentimes like ingredients to a recipe.
Yeah.
And just because we might really love cinnamon, we might really love garlic or salt and pepper is like tried and true, inherently good on everything, right? Like doesn't mean beliefs. Like if we look at beliefs through this black and white, they need to be steadfast applied to every single thing. Depending on the belief, it won't produce like the end result. Just like some ingredients really fuck up some recipes. You might like really love cake, but if you put in, I don't know, like take the sugar out of it, you're like,
they've tried.
Yeah.
People have tried taking sugar out of cake. Doesn't fucking work.
Doesn't work.
So
unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. I like that approach. I mean, I want to be respectful of both of our times here.
Yeah,
man.
For
this
sure,
man. This has been a blast. I want to ask you the fast five. They're going to be rapid fire, one sentence, one word answers.
Cool.
Number one, what is your go-to podcast? If you're listening to any.
Joe Rogan.
Fair enough. Number two, spoken like a true Austin, by the way. Number two, what is your favorite book that you've read in the past year?
Oh, man. The Gap in the Game.
Mm. Number three, what's something you can't live without?
Prayer.
Number four, what is a quote that you live by?
Keep it simple.
Number five, if you could sum up your focus right now to just one word, what's that word?
Grace.
Mm. Beautiful stuff, man.
Thank you.
James, thanks for coming through. Where can the people here connect with you, hear more about what you're doing, what is going on at Highbrow, like whatever you want to plug? I endorse it, so
awesome.
Go for it.
Thank you. Thank you. Instagram is a great place to connect with me. I'm not big on all the other social media platforms, but the gram. James P. Quigley. You can find me there. I do like to respond to messages when I can, but I just kind of share what's going on around me. Highbrow, Lowbrow, Austin is the Instagram page for the space that I run here. It's a private membership social club and a pop-up event space. It's been such a game changer in my life to be able to kind of like not only help build a community, but also work with so many different people to help them with their events and their happenings. And other than that, I'm in Austin, man. Just come on down. And like Corey did, if you find me, we'll go maybe grab some barbecue and go shooting just like we did.
Yeah. Coffee, tacos, and guns.
That's it, baby. Welcome to Austin.
Thanks, James.
All right, brother.